too.
I had no words to answer him with. I could only stare at him.
Ask the missus, he said. She's got them, no mistake.
He took a cigarette from the box on the register, put it in his mouth, and lit it with a lighter. Yesterday morning? I asked. Not evening?
Morning for sure. 8 o'clock. Your wife was the first customer of the day. I wouldn't forget something like that. Hey, when your very first customer is a young woman, it puts you in a good mood, know what I mean?
I was unable to fake a smile for him, and the voice that came from me didn't sound like my own.
Oh, well, I guess that takes care of that. Sorry, I didn't know she picked them up.
He nodded and glanced at me, crushed out the cigarette from which he had taken no more than 2 or 3 puffs, and went back to his ironing. He seemed to have become interested in me, as if he wanted to tell me something, but decided in the end to say nothing, and I, meanwhile, had things I wanted to ask him. How had Kumiko looked when she came for her cleaning? What had she been carrying? But I was confused and very thirsty. What I most wanted was to sit down somewhere and have a cold drink. I felt that was the only way I would ever be able to think about anything again. I went straight from the cleaners to the coffee house a few doors away and ordered a glass of iced tea. The place was cool inside, and I was the only customer. Small wall-mounted speakers were playing an orchestrated version of the Beatles' 8 Days a Week. I thought about the seashore again. I imagined myself barefoot and moving along the beach at the water's edge. The sand was burning hot, and the wind carried the heavy smell of the tide. I inhaled deeply and looked up at the sky. Stretching out my hands, palms upward, I could feel a summer sun burning into them. Soon a cold wave washed over my feet. Whichever way you looked at it, it was odd for Kumiko to have picked things up from the cleaners on her way to work. For one thing, she would have had to squeeze onto a jam-packed commuter train holding freshly pressed clothes on hangers. Then she would have had to do it again on the way home. Not only would they be something extra to carry, but the cleaner's careful work would have been reduced to a mass of wrinkles. As Kumiko was sensitive about such things, I couldn't imagine she would have done something so pointless. All she had to do was stop by on the way home from work. Or, if she was going to be late, she could have asked me to pick them up. There was only one conceivable explanation. She had known she was not coming home. Blouse and skirt in hand, she had gone off somewhere. That way, she would have had at least one change of clothing with her, and anything else she needed, she could buy. She had her credit cards and her Cashpoint card and her own bank account. She could go anywhere she wanted. And she was with someone. A man. There was no other reason for her to leave home. This was serious. Kumiko had disappeared, leaving behind all her clothes and shoes. She had always enjoyed buying clothes, to which she devoted considerable care and attention. For her to have left home with little more than the clothes on her back would have required a major act of will, and yet without the slightest hesitation, it seemed to me, she had walked out of the house with nothing more than a blouse and skirt. No, her clothing was probably the last thing on her mind. Leaning back in my chair, half listening to the painful, sanitized background music, I imagined Kumiko boarding a crowded commuter train with her clothes on wire hangers in the cleaner's plastic bags. I recalled the color of the dress she was wearing, the fragrance of the cologne behind her ears, the smooth perfection of her back. I must have been exhausted. If I shut my eyes, I felt I would float off somewhere else. I would end up in a quite different place.
2. No good news in this chapter. I left the coffee house and wandered through the streets. The intense heat of the afternoon began to make me feel sick, even feverish. But the one place I didn't want to go was home. The thought of waiting alone in that silent house for a phone call that would probably never come, I found suffocating. All I could think to do was to go and see Mei Kasahara. I went home, climbed over the wall, and made my way down the alley to the back of her house. Leaning against the fence of the vacant house on the other side of the alley, I stared at the garden with its bird sculpture. Mei would notice me if I stood here like this. Apart